And the wait is over. That's right. It's time to gather up the congregation once again here at the Parish of the Patriots. It's an island of tranquility in the sea of madness known as Clown World. Glad you could all join up with us once again this week. If you're new around here, you're welcome. Think you'll enjoy what we do here. And of course, we have those who come back time and time again. This is 107th installment of the show. And yeah, if you didn't know, the show is supported by the congregation. Don't be shy. Pay those tithes. It is very much appreciated if you want to be a part of that. Information's at the bottom of the description page. We got snail mail. We got Bitcoin. We have a Monero address down there. If you got some other weirdo cryptocurrency, drop me an email. That's down there as well, and I'll do my best to get you an address for that. We always like to start off with the listener supporter mailbag. Let's get to it. Maybe we won't run as long as we usually do. Who the hell am I kidding? We're going to run long. We run long every week, but it's not intentionally. Let's get right to the mailbag and on into the show. Mr. T, one of our weekly supporters, GPD. Show just keeps getting better, I think. Hope this small tithe helps. It all helps, and it is very much appreciated. And it's always good to hear. I never know how these things come out. I've said it so many times, but it really is. And I'm sure anybody else that does one of these shows kind of would say the same things. You know, there's times I've like done a show and I'm done with it and I'm like, oh yes, that was one of the really good ones, you know, and I get like not hardly any feedback on it. And then there's other times I do a show and I'm like, meh, you know, I mean, I always put my best foot forward, my best effort in, and I'm just like, yeah, it was okay, I suppose. And I'll get all this feedback, man, that was the greatest show ever, it was awesome. So that's why the feedback is so important, you know. It's nice to know that some of it's, you know, it is appreciated. From Nick, thanks for all the good works and good counsel. Be well and God bless. And God bless all of y'all. I'm not launching into the Christian specific message early, but I mean, this world that we live in, this clown world, is satanic to its very core. I mean, any way you look at it, I don't know how people mentally process it without a Christian perspective. And I mean, I know people do. I'm not saying you're nuts if you don't, but I'm just saying, I don't know how you do it. I mean, because the only way any of this madness makes any sense in the bigger scheme of things is the Christian perspective. So I don't know how people do it, but it is truly a satanic world we live in. Let's see here. Next up, Grandpa Dan, I appreciate everything you do, and I never miss a show. Don't burn your house down trying to keep warm, from your Texan brother. Let's see here. Neo-Nazi ride. I guess, you know. Yeah, no, it was funny because they were talking about all these stories of people, you know, who had lost their electricity and they're trying to keep their houses warm. They were doing all this crazy shit trying to keep their houses warm. And they said, you know, they were telling people, don't bring your charcoal grills in and fire up your charcoal grill in the house. But it's like the Darwin Awards or something. I mean, yeah, I don't understand how people would have to be told that. I was also thinking how funny it is that people that are virtue signaling, you know, because I have an electric car, I'm saving the planet. The planet is being saved because I drive an electric car. And, you know, at least people with their gasoline cars that maybe like thought ahead and fueled their cars up, and it's like your house loses electricity and it's freezing cold, and after a couple hours, your house is getting unbearably cold. And what are you going to do? I'm going to freeze today. Well, no, you go out in your car. Hopefully you have the sense not to do it in the garage with the door shut, because if people are bringing charcoal grills in and firing them off with lighter fluid in the house, then yeah, you might have to tell people that. But you go out in your car and you start your car and you can sit in the car with the heater and you're at least not freezing to death. You might get sick of sitting in your car, but it's cozy. You can be nice. You can be nice and cozy in there. But people with the electric cars, they're shit out of luck. How'd your virtue signal? How'd all that virtue signaling work out for you? They might have to turn around and sue somebody because they put the charcoal grill in their house and asphyxiated themselves. Has to be somebody's fault. But I just had this vision. I thought it was funny. I had this vision of people going out to their electric green car and firing it up. And, oh, the heater's warm. And then, like, 20 minutes later, the batteries are dead. Because those electric cars, I tell you what, you know, if you live in California where you can just roll around with the windows open, that's all fine and good. But if you're having to run the heater in serious cold or the air conditioner in serious hot, that battery life goes down really, really fast. I had people sitting out there, like, 30 minutes. And about the time it starts to get lukewarm in there, that they battery dead. And it's like, oh, no, I can't plug it in. Fossil fuels, please come save me. Oh, shoot. Well, we did enjoy it like a week later, though. I straight up, you know, because it got coldest, let's see, on that Tuesday. Don't remember the date off the top of my head. Doesn't matter. It was negative one. I think it actually got down to negative two here. And freezing cold, you know, and people going around, you know, freezing and everybody's water out and everything. And literally a week later, I was outside in a t-shirt. It was like 70 degrees. We always say, if you don't like the weather here in Texas, wait about 5 minutes. It'll change. See if you like that. And finally up from Debbie, Grandpa Dan, hope this finds you well. Love the shows. Keep up the good work. My prayers are with you. I pray you and the listeners are all healthy and are prepared for anything that can happen. I do laugh at how there are no genders. If a man thinks he's a woman, he can compete with them. Men are stronger than women. We are not the same. There's a lot of mental illness in the West. They have shows saying men are having babies. So funny, there are women who think there are men. Lord help us. I saw a funny story the other day where they were alleging that science says that gender is just a sliding scale now. That, you know, because we have to trust the science. It's our new god now, one of our new gods. We have many, many new gods that we have been presented with here in our modern world. And one of the main gods that drives the agenda is the science. And we have to believe the science. And according to the science, the genders are actually the sliding scale thing. There could just be a very fluid thing. It doesn't even exist. And of course, we know this is just more insanity. It's just more. It's so funny because we live in this insane world where, you know, words aren't used to convey information, and that's the way we're hardwired. You know, you people say things and you try to get to the truth and you're exchanging information and you try to come to a greater understanding. And then, you know, we had science, and that was like people were doing experiments to verify and test things out and see if they were true. But now we live in this deal where words are purposely meant to muddy and confuse and deceive, and science is nothing but a political agenda. We have this sliding scale of gender. What the hell does that even mean? Well, I'm not quite man, and I'm not quite woman. I'm right here on about a 7. I mean, what the hell does that mean? I don't know, because they do. They have this whole gender fluid thing that they're promoting right now. And it's like, you know, on a scale of 1 to 10, you know, I'm at a 7. I'm kind of lean female, but I'm kind of male. And you're kind of fucking... you're kind of nuts. I mean, yeah, you know, it's the insanity. It just keeps, like I said, now science says there's a sliding scale and you can't actually even qualify anybody as male, female, it's just whatever the hell. Gender is now whatever the hell you think it is, which means it means nothing. According, you know, if you try to apply any logic to the insanity. So anyway, that wraps up our listener supporter mailbag. Once again, it is very much appreciated. And I always enjoy the back and forth reading the notes that folks send, and means a lot. So yeah, let's rock off in here. It's a little different this weekend. I mean, half the time, not even half the time, like the vast majority of the time, I sit down here and I have like a blank page in front of me, and I'll jot down as I start talking about things, I'll jot it down. You know, and of course, now that I don't have any social media, I've abandoned all social media, which is honestly kind of liberating. I like it more than I thought I would. You know, I mean, you get so used to posting on social media every day. And then all of a sudden, when you don't have social media anymore, it's like, it frees your time up. It frees your mind up. I really, to be honest, kind of enjoying it. But I kind of went through and this last past week and just like, while sitting down enjoying my morning coffee, just like something I would normally, because when I had social media, I'd sit there and I'd sit there and reflect, and I would think of a point to post up on the social media, and I would post it up on the social media, and you know, there it is. So I would just jot down something that maybe I would have normally posted on social media, and then, you know, of course, now I've got this whole page of stuff, and I'm not going to probably talk about I'm probably not going to talk about the vast majority of it, but I thought, well, at least this way might give me just different things to throw out there. So we might be a little more random than usual. I don't know. This show is always pretty random. That's probably going to be pretty hard to do. But yeah, let's get off into our discussion this week. And then, as always, we'll get into a Christian specific segment later on here. And in the spirit of this kind of random throwing out of thoughts here. I was thinking about this the other day, and I just now I had to pause here recording because I wanted to get an accurate information. And I was looking up number of people killed in Iraq by the official government. Here's just a complete verification of how the government is a constant lie, because you look up in the official numbers for the number of deaths, of combat deaths and whatnot, you know, of troops that were killed in the Iraq war, they tell us that 4,500 troops were killed in the Iraq war. And I would be willing to bet that you know of somebody personally, or you at least know of a family that lost somebody that was in the military in the Iraq war. But yet they tell us only 4,500 people died and the troops were killed in the Iraq war. And now they're telling us 500,000 people have died from the Doom virus. And yet, more than likely, you don't know anybody that's actually died of the Doom virus. You might probably know somebody that died with the Doom virus. But I was just thinking of that contrast. On the one hand, they told us that we got through the Iraq war, only lost 4,500 troops. And on the other hand, they're telling us 500,000 people have died of the deadliest virus ever. And yet, you know people that have died in Iraq. You know people that joined the military and wound up in Iraq and got killed over there. And yet, how many people do you know that have actually died of the Doom virus? It's just such a blatant lie in your face. And it's like they don't even care. It was interesting, though, one little interesting piece of trivia as I was looking this up to try to find the numbers here. And they had a whole listing. What I found was a page with a whole listing of you know, the supposed number of deaths, you know, casualties in all of these different wars. And they actually listed the USS Liberty incident. So kudos to them for that. Of course, now I'm sure that will be scrubbed from the internet. You can't put that in there with war casualties because it was just an accident. But yeah, I thought that was kind of interesting. But what an in-your-face lie, isn't it? Oh, we've only lost 4,500 troops and everybody knows somebody. Because how are you going to know? You know, people at the time, they'd be like, well, I guess Jim that got blowed up in Iraq, I guess he was one of the 4,500. What about, you know, call somebody on the phone. Oh, yeah, my neighbor over there, his son got killed in Iraq. Oh, really? He must have too have been another one of the 4,500. And on it goes. And now we have this 500,000, which is a grave, dark milestone. People that have died from the deadliest virus ever. 500,000 Americans. All the news people with their somber look on their face. I never trust people that can smile on demand and then switch just like that to this somber face. And that's why I hate the media. You look at them, you're not to be promoting the hatreds or anything, but you turn on the network media and it's like, hi, it's great to be with you. Put the false smile on. Oh, today in entertainment news. Very next story. It's a very grim milestone. It's just like that. How do you trust anybody that can do that? It's so patently insincere. Why would you trust anybody that is like that? I don't trust people like that. Is that they're with their somber voice. We have passed a grave milestone. President Biden was was let out to commemorate the 500,000 Americans who have lost their lives to the deadly virus. Do you know anybody that's lost anybody in your family that died from coronavirus? Not with coronavirus, because, you know, if you get in a car wreck and they tested you and you had coronavirus the day before you got in the car wreck, you're going to get chalked up as coronavirus victim. But yep, they're telling us 500,000 people, and nobody knows anybody that's like died exclusively of coronavirus. But it's just yet an example of this in-your-face lying. Absolutely, absolutely unbelievable. And what kind of got me, you know, to give credit where credit's due, what kind of got me thinking about this is I was listening to, I suppose it was one of the Daily Nationalist shows. I mean, it was like a year or so ago. Might have been a couple of years. I don't know. Time gets away from me so fast. And Sven Longshanks and Dr. Johnson were talking about something along those lines. But Dr. Johnson was talking about making the point that, how the numbers were skewed way down. They were lying massively about how many American troops were being killed in Iraq. You know, they were coming back with these ridiculously low numbers. And I'd never really thought about it, to be honest. I mean, we know the government lies about literally everything, but I'd never really thought about that particular element of it. And that got me thinking as they were going along, passing the grim milestone of 500,000 COVID deaths. And I got to think about that in relation to their ridiculously low numbers of Iraq war deaths. It's just, again, a grim reminder of how, you know, everything is just this constant, constant lie. That was just a random thing, though. I thought something for you to put in put in the old noggin and kind of chew on a little bit and think, because you really have to process, because we are hardwired as a people to kind of assume people are trying to convey some sort of information to us that's truthful, you know, to exchange information. We're really not hardwired. We are hardwired for a high trust society. We really are. It's not in our nature to live in a society where people just, you know, they communicate for the sole purpose of deceiving 24/7. I mean, yeah, you know that people lie and whatnot, but you still want to process things in a way we can't help it. We tend to want to process things that there must be some truth here. And when you live in a society where there's no truth, it's just all lies, I think it really mentally breaks people down. You know, I really do. And I just think it's, you know, the more you can understand this and the more you can kind of try to wrap your mind around it, the more it'll less, you know, less effective, you know, less have less effect on you, less effect on you mentally. And now this air, I thought we'd talk about is kind of an interesting mental exercise. And this is something I actually just thought of right before doing the show, like, which is normally what happens. Like I said, an old page of stuff I jotted down all week. I'm going to talk about this. I'm going to bring up the CPAC inviting young Pharaoh to talk and then canceling him at an event called Uncancel America. It's like you're watching conservatism just go ahead and finish offing itself, which is kind of funny, honestly. I mean, it's like, why did they invite this guy? Why? I mean, did they like just pick a random black guy? It's like, hey, there's a black guy. We got to have a black guy here. Let's get him. Young Pharaoh. He sounds like he was king. And then like, oh, wait, he said something about somebody one time. That's not allowed. Sorry, you're canceled at the uncanceled event. It was just so humorous because it's just another illustration of conservatism just offing itself in public. I had that jotted down, but really, I mean, how much can you say about that? I got all these things. Because I sit down first thing in the morning, 5:30 in the morning, I'm up and about in the quiet, having my first cup of coffee, processing the day. And that's why I try to always record the show in the mornings. There's a few rare times I've had to record the show in the afternoon. And I don't feel as sharp. First thing in the morning, second cup of coffee. That's how I try to time this show. Well, you're not very sharp today, but okay. But I do the best I can week in, week out. I thought we'd have a fun mental exercise and talk about something besides. I could come on here week in, week out, and talk about the doom flu and talk about this great reset and this insanity and, you know, this push towards like a, I don't know, some sort of one world order nonsense that we all think about. But again, it just, we think about these things so much, and I myself have to have a break from it. I like to have, you know, I thought we'd talk about something kind of different. Kind of focus on something a little bit different this week. And I thought we'd talk about, we'd have a little mental exercise and talk about polygamy. That's right. No, I thought we'd talk about polygamy and compare it to, because you say polygamy, and the first thing you probably think of is, you know, either way back, like Old Testament Bible days, or you think about some Middle Eastern country where polygamy is still legal, or maybe you think about the Mormons back when they were based and they had polygamy. You're defending the Mormons. No, don't get off into that. But, you know, when polygamy was kind of their thing, or, you know, and you might think of it as kind of like a backwards thing or whatever. You probably, I guess the point being is you probably have a negative reaction to it. But I thought we'd do a kind of a critical thought exercise this week. And we're just going to kind of work through this. I've only just kind of chewed a little of this in my mind. So we're going to work through this together. I thought it would be fun to do that. As we look at polygamy in comparison to the modern version of quote-unquote monogamy, and I say quote-unquote monogamy, we'll get into that here in a minute, of the modern feminist marriage system, which is really what we have. We have this modern feminist marriage system. Now, as we do this, it's going to really probably, I think it's going to wind up coming off as though, you know, Grandpa came out and was advocating for polygamy, and that's not really what I want to do here. I just thought it would be interesting to take something like polygamy that kind of gives people a knee-jerk negative reaction, but really it's more about breaking down and analyzing the modern feminist monogamy system that we allegedly have for what it is. So I thought doing a kind of a side-by-side comparison and thinking about how, you know, which system is actually, if you just look at it logically, makes more sense, or perhaps perhaps a better way to put it is leads to a more stable society. Now, as we think about this, we got to break it down like a market, you know, and again, bear with me. This is like a mental exercise. I'm not advocating polygamy, and I'm not trying to, what do I want to say, define women down to being a beer product. You know, women are just an object and a product. But I'm trying to put it into terms where we can understand it. I'm not trying to degrade women down to they're just a piece of meat to pass around. But if we put this down into like a market term, and I thought that would be the easiest way to do this comparison, is to put this in terms of like marketing a product. Because if you think of it in terms of marketing a product, then women are the sellers because women have the product that men want, which is basically reproductive access. You can think of it as sex, but really when it comes down to it, what does that mean? That means reproductive access. So women are sellers and men would be the buyers. Now, if you look at the modern feminist, I call it the modern feminist monogamy system, but it's not really a monogamy system. But if you look at it, it's what you would call a seller's market. Buyers are scrambling around and taking, honestly, running around signing up for low-grade products. They're signing up for low-grade, worn-out products because it's a seller's market, where with a polygamy system, it tends to be a buyer's market. Because in a polygamy system, like if you had a monarch, because if polygamy basically only works in a monarch system if you have a king. So you start at the top and you look at a king and he might have, say, 200 wives. Well, why does he have 200 wives? Well, because he's a big buyer. I mean, he's got enough wealth because polygamy demands that, you know, the guy that takes in all these wives can actually support and provide for them. So a king in a country, he's got the ability to provide for 200 wives. I mean, he can keep them clothed, fed, you know, living the lifestyle that they expect to live as one of the queen or one of the king's wives. And of course, there would be a hierarchy amongst the king's wives. And so there's not really a point to get into that. But the point is that the king is able to financially provide for. And you know, it's not like the king had to go out and like force these women to be their wives. They were like lining up like, well, the king's going to take in another wife. And man, you know, fathers were out there and mothers were out there like, you know, dusting up their daughters to line them up to go for the trial, because it was like, you know, if a woman was high enough status to become one of the queen's wives, I mean, you know, like a poor man's wife, you know, she going down through the street, somebody might run into her, knock her down in a puddle of mud, not think anything about it because she's just a poor man's wife trying to get through the streets to go to the market. But one of the king's wives ain't going to get pushed down in the mud. It's status. You know, the king's wife has a certain amount of power herself because of her status as one of the king's wives. So this is something like women were like, you know, lining up to be one of the king's wives because there was a lot of social social standing and such attached to that. As a result, you know, the prettiest young women with the most virtue and the most things to bring to the table were the ones that were going to get into those positions. And as you work your way down, like you're some poor guy that barely scrapes by and you can maybe kind of sort of provide for one woman, you're just going to have one wife under that sort of system. Because, again, we're looking at this like a market-based system. So the poor guy, he's only going to be able to, and she's probably not going to be all that, you know? I mean, she ain't going to be the most attractive. It's going to be a little rough around the edges, but still, that's what he's able to provide for. And that's the best she can do. And you kind of come together. You know, the poor guy ain't going to be able to land a queen tier woman. That's just not realistic because she could do better. And likewise, you know, that old gal, she don't even need to go try out to be one of the king's wives because they ain't even going to let her work in the palace. They're not even going to let her work in the palace because she's a little homely. You know, she don't have all of that to bring to the table. But again, we have to look at this as buyers and sellers. And the men in these things are always the buyers and women are selling. They have the access to what men do not have access to, which is essentially access to the reproductive cycle. Now, you may think I'm being kind of just cold and analytical, but there's a certain amount of that is necessary to look at this because you have to detach yourself from the emotionalism of it and look at the social dynamics. That's what we're trying to do here. As we're part of this mental exercise, we're probably not going to get completely through this mental exercise. You're free to continue pondering and thinking about this after we're done discussing it. But a part of this mental exercise, it requires, you know, removing the emotionalism to it. And of course, one of the first reactions as you talk about this is people be, you know, like you'll see us, for instance, they'll do like some kind of documentary on some fringe people that are living out here in the woods, you know, and they live a polygamy lifestyle. And this guy has six women that live with him. And what's the first thing the news people, you know, the documentary people always want to ask about? The sex. How do you manage the sex? Because in this cheap, disgusting society we live in, all relationships have been cheapened down to sex. They'll sit here and say, well, you can't even talk about polygamy because it cheapens women down. But everything is cheapened down in this society. Relationships have been cheapened down to the sex. How do you handle the sex? Like, that is the center of the relationship. If you are in a relationship and y'all are banging it out every day, and nobody is, but y'all are banging it out every day, you have a unique relationship, y'all are having sex every day. How long is that? 24 hours in a day, let's say 30 minutes, an hour at the most. I don't know. I mean, we'll be generous and say an hour a day. So now what about what goes on in that other 23 hours? It seems like that might be relevant. In this society, they've cheapened relationships down to nothing but sex. What about sex? What about sex? And the sex in this society, by the way, has nothing to do with the reproductive cycle, with access to the reproduction system, which is supposed to be the entire point. That's why we're given these urges, so that we will continue to propagate, to continue on, you know, furthering the next generation. And yet that has been removed. It's just become this empty pleasure thing. Now, when women showed up for the tryouts, see if they could be the king's, one of the, you know, the king's latest wife, you know, she had to be of high virtue. You know, I mean, she couldn't just have a pretty face. Like, if you showed up with your daughter and she got a pretty attractive face and everything, they were doing like background check. You know, they would know, because if she showed up and found out that, like, she was making the rounds every night, you know, every weekend she's making the round, like everybody in town, you know, like the carousel at the carnival, like everybody's rode it, you know. She's not going to get in. But that's why there was like a high, a high value. Because, you again, if you look at this as a product exchange, you want to go buy a new car. Like, if you want to go buy a new car, you expect to buy a new car. You don't want to go and you go to the dealership and you're like, I want to buy a new car. And they're like, well, we got this new car here. And you're like, oh, okay. And, you know, you do the deal and you take in this new car. And then you get it home and you discover there's old French fries under the seat. And that old thing has actually got 180,000 miles. You see, it's illegal in this country to really, they used to do this thing when they had mechanical odometers way back in the day. And crooked, shady ass car lots would go in there and take the speedometer out and roll that odometer back, and they would be caught selling cars like it's a cream puff, got 30,000 miles. But it wound up the thing had 90,000 miles on it. They rolled the odometer back and they made that a federal crime. And yet in relationships today, you hook up with some old gal and you marry her and you think you're getting some bitch with 30,000 miles, but she's been around to every party scene and that bitch got 180,000 miles. You're getting some bitch with 180,000. You're getting some old gal with 180,000 miles. She's been passed around by everybody. Imagine, you think you're buying a new car and it comes to find out it's a used car, and it is a well used car. You see, you couldn't do that under the polygamy system. That's why virginity was held in such high esteem, because that meant you were getting a new car, because you're making a deal here. You're agreeing as the buyer that you're providing for this woman for the rest of your life. You know, it is very, there were very strict, very narrow parameters in which you could put a wife out. You know, it's like you couldn't just up and kick her out. Once you took her in, you made that agreement. You're supposed to take care of her for the rest of her life. So as part of that deal, you wanted to be sold an honest product. You buy a new car, you expect it to last a whole lot of years because it's a new car. If you get an old hoopty, you don't expect it to last a lot of years. It's the same thing. Now you look at the modern feminist so-called monogamy system, and everybody's running around clamoring for old used cars, and they think they're getting, and it's not really, and I say you put it in quotation marks, because is it really a monogamy system? It's because under the polygamy system, pretty much every man expected to be marrying a virgin. You know, I mean, that was kind of the societal expectation, is you were marrying a virgin. That was the deal. You were getting a new car out of it. But under this system, I mean, these guys are running around because it's a seller's market. These guys are running around, you know, backstabbing each other, doing all kinds of crazy shit, simping out, you know, That's high simping. These guys are high simping for these old used up hoopties that really, you know, they shouldn't even be on a used car lot. They should be those guys have those little convoys. I don't know if you've ever seen them. Like, you'll see these convoys. It'll be like this wholly unsafe looking thing. And they'll be like an old minivan. And it's got a car dolly on it. And with an old, even junkier car on it and another junky car. And they're like a train. And they're hauling those old junky ass cars because they don't even make the used car lots here. They're hauling that shit to Mexico because that's the only place got any market for them. That's how these guys are running around simping for crap that should be getting hauled down to Mexico. So, but it's not really, I mean, we sit here and we say, well, we have a monogamy system today, but we don't because of the easy divorce. Because you see, now women could decide, imagine you buy the car. You just keep using that analogy. You buy the car and you think you bought the car, but then the seller comes back a couple years later and takes it back. And you're like, well, wait a minute. I've been providing for this car. I put some new rims on it, you know, and bought a new paint job, cleaned it up a little bit, you know. But then the car dealership you bought it from shows up one day and takes it back, says, ah, no, we're taking this car and all the improvements you made. I had to overhaul that engine. Too bad. We put another engine in there. But they took the product back. You see, we said there was like, well, we have a monogamy system, but we don't because A, you're buying used cars now because there's hardly any new cars left. And B, couple, 3, 4, 5 years, however long years later, the car goes away. You didn't get that. You were going to keep that car your whole life. But then the seller took the car back. You know, she takes the car back. She takes the product back along with half your shit. And then she goes around and because she thinks she can get a better buyer after making the deal. After agreeing to the deal, she could tell you she reneges on the deal. And as a bonus, she's incentivized because she takes half your shit. Now you lost everything. And for what? An old hoopty. And she goes because she could market it to a better buyer. And it incentivizes because of the seller's market. The women are incentivized to constantly be looking for a better buyer, even after they agree. I mean, it's one thing to be looking for a better buyer while she's single, but these women will commit. Okay, I'm selling my product to you. Reproductive access. Only you don't get any reproductive because we're going to do everything we can to keep that from happening. Heaven forbid. But then down the road, but she's still looking. She's still on the lookout for a better buyer, even though she done sold to you. Down the road, she decides, man, this guy over here I work with, I think he's a higher status buyer. I can do better. I had a better buyer. So she goes ahead, kicks the original buyer to the curb along with half his shit she makes off and resells to this other guy. This is why the notion that we have a monogamy system now is a big, huge, fat, ugly lie, just like a whole bunch of these bitches are huge, fat, ugly subpar products. I saw a deal the other day. It's like the latest Sports Illustrated, which has just become a running joke. Sports Illustrated used to be like the Hot Rod magazine. You're looking in there to see the fine looking vehicles that you're never going to be able to buy. Like looking at a Ferrari. You ain't going to buy no Ferrari, but you could look at that thing and be like, man, I bet that thing drives like a dream. Same thing. You look at a Sports Illustrated swimsuit. You would look back in there and be like, damn, I mean, I know I ain't never getting nothing like that, but that's a nice looking car. You know, now Sports Illustrated has become this laughing stock thing. They are so progressive now. Look, we have fat, ugly bitches in a bikini. Like anybody wants to see it. You go down to any beach anywhere and you can see all the fat ugly bitches that shouldn't be wearing bikinis all day long. You don't need to look at Sports Illustrated for that. I'd be like picking up Hot Rod magazine and you look in there and there's a car on the cover and it's shittier than the car you drive. Why would you buy the magazine? It's totally and patently absurd, just like the rest of this clown world society. Now the point of this mental exercise, again, I'm not promoting polygamy or you're coming up, which as we grind through this, and I hope we're doing it in a way to where it kind of makes sense. And that was my goal here, because I get these thoughts all jumbled up in my head. And it's like, can I communicate this in a way to where, you know, you look at it from a different and you understand what I'm saying? Because I know what I'm trying to say here and I don't always understand if I convey it. Now, as we look at this, which of these two systems, as we've started laying them out here, you know, which is going to be more conductive to a stable society? I mean, you can sit there and say, polygamy is just backward. And again, I'm not promoting polygamy, but just analytically looking at it, as we look at the old polygamy system versus this feminist monogamy marriage system that we have in the West today, which of these two systems is more likely, analytically looking at it, to lead to a stable society? How are you going to have, could you have a stable market system to where the sellers can go back after they have taken the agreement of the deal and money's been exchanged and they've sold the product, they can come back at any time and just take the product back, along with not just the money they've already received, not with what they've already received, but more. What does that incentivize? And everybody sits around, why is the divorce rate so high? Why are marriages, why are relationships such a mess in the West? Because it's incentivized. The seller can, A, sell you a fraudulent product. They can tell you, oh, well, this is a low mileage vehicle. It's not even against the law. In fact, women are encouraged to roll back the odometer. Trick you. The society encourages this, is incentivizes this. This is another way that a breakdown of a functioning society has been encouraged. Imagine having a market for anything. I've used cars to death, but you could use any product. And you sell the product. And the person who sells the product at any time can come back and take the product back along with even more of your money. Who in the hell would buy that product? Yeah, a lot of the MAGTOW guys get a lot of, you know, get a lot of static for that. But I mean, on a logical sense, you know, it makes sense, because if you were having that system where the seller at any time, 2 years, 3 years later, can come back, take the product you thought you bought back along with half your shit, hey, who the hell's going to sign up for that deal? It's insane. It's utter insanity. There are just so many ways in which, you know, the society is breaking down. Like I said, we could talk about all day long, come on the show every week and talk about this doom flu nonsense. So many of how, like, the terrorism they've promoted overseas has been hoaxed, how now they're drumming up this nonsense of evil white supremacist domestic terrorism and all that. I could do that week in, week out. And those are obvious facets of a decaying and a society that's collapsing on itself. But there are so many aspects to this societal collapse. So many things, you know, it's not just these things. It's literally institutionally wide. There is pretty much no institution in the West now that hasn't been corrupted, that hasn't been turned on its head and turned into something. I mean, under this polygamy system, you know, it led to a more stable society. This current system we have now, and I'm not saying monogamy can't lead to, I'm talking about the current system how. We're not talking about what the founding fathers wrote in the Constitution. We're talking about what the U.S. government is today. Likewise, we're not talking about monogamy as one would traditionally define monogamy as it existed, say, in the 1700s. We're talking about what we got now, the reality of this clown world we live in today. And the entire structure of it is designed to destroy society, to destroy the institution of marriage, to destroy families, to destroy everything around it. And this is just one facet. It's just one element. How many more are there? Pretty much all of them. Now, Can we have monogamy and stable society? Well, obviously, this, what we're having right now, this lunacy system that we have right now, is not the norm. I mean, we're living in almost uncharted clown world, you know, clown waters here. You know, so, I mean, it's not like monogamy is not compatible with stable society. It's far from it. But this current shit system that we have right now, yes, it is purposely designed and purposely set up to corrode and destroy society. Likewise, we talk about, like, polygamy existing under, like, say, a monarchy system. A monarchy system, by its very nature, leads to a stable society. This current democracy system we have, obviously, observing the reality, looking at the results, it leads to unstable societies. This system we have, everything in it is geared towards destabilizing the social order. Everything is constantly in flux. Everything is constantly being changed, and not for the better. And it's all based on lies. You can sit here and have this discussion, and hopefully you've been able to think about this analytically as we've intended to do. Because the current society will say, oh, well, this is, you're just demeaning women. You're just, but what they promote, this current feminist, quote unquote, monogamy system, this current system that we have, is the most demeaning thing for women. Are women more demeaned now than they were in years past? I mean, look at the results, not what the salesman's telling you. And what they keep selling everybody on is this notion that this current system lifts women up. We're always hearing this about empowering women. We're empowering women. This is woman power. We're making these girl power. We're empowering women. We're making women more powerful. We're somehow it's implied that they're making women's lives better. But what do the results tell us? Are women's lives better? Are men's lives better? Is anybody's lives better under the shit system that we have? I mean, it's literally like everything else. It's all a lie. But they keep selling people on. They keep telling them, oh, this is making your life better, but it's making life worse. Like somebody feeding you poison. If you went to a restaurant and you ate lunch there and later on that day you got sick. And then you went back to the next to that same restaurant the next day and ordered the same meal and you got sicker. And you kept going back day in and day out and you were getting sicker and sicker and sicker. And the people at the restaurant kept saying, oh, no, we're making you healthy. This is the healthiest food on the market. We're the healthiest restaurant on the block. And we're making you healthier. Here, come eat some more. Eat another helping of it. How do you not notice that you're getting sicker every time you eat it? But would you keep going back? You wouldn't. You would sit there. I would sit there using that illustration. You said, well, that's absurd. Who would go back? But we keep going back. We keep buying into it. Women keep buying into it and saying, yes, they're empowering me. They're making my life better. And their life is getting worse. They're getting sicker as a group, as a society. It's getting sicker. The results speak for themselves. Every time you go back and eat that plate of enchiladas, your ass is getting more sicker. The runs are getting... You're spending more and more time on the toilet. Figure it out. They're poisoning you. But people, as a whole, they want to believe what they're told. The guy at the restaurant keeps saying it's the best, healthiest food ever. You keep going back for another helping, and it keeps making the society sicker and sicker. It's one of the things really drives me, because the dynamics between men and women is something that should just happen so naturally. It really is. This isn't, you get all these people writing all of these different views on it. People write long blog posts and articles and whole magazines full of, women's magazines love to go on about relationships. This shit is not that hard. I mean, really, it should just be hardwired in. This should be something that you don't even have to think about. You know, this would be one of those like breathing. You just go through it and it just happens. You don't have to sit around and think about breathing. These relationships between men and women shouldn't be that complicated, but they are. And it's intentionally so because everything's being broke down. We're being sold this constant lie. We're being sold this constant destruction. But this isn't that hard. And it shouldn't, but it's just it, like so many other things, so many other institutions, everything is being destroyed. Everything is being torn down. Everything is being corrupted. Corruption runs rampant through every single aspect of our lives. And what we've come to accept this is somehow normal. This is supposed to somehow be normal. This is far from normal. It's anything but normal. But what's the point? Well, the point is, I guess, understanding that you're not crazy. If you were the one sane person living in a mental institution where people were literally nuts and they're like craziest of crazy people, and you were the one sane person living in there, eventually you would start thinking you were the crazy one. These things are, it's important to understand these things so that you understand you're not the crazy one here. It's everybody else, it's this whole society that surrounds you that has gone insane. It's important because otherwise you're going to lose your mind. You're going to start questioning your sanity. You're going to be the one going off the deep end because you must be the crazy one. Everybody else in society says this is the greatest thing. Everybody else in society walking around talking to themselves, doing whatever the visions are telling them because you're in a mental institution. We are in a nationwide mental institution. And if you're one of the sane people, it's a tough road to hoe because you're surrounded by this constant insanity. It's so important to step back and look at these things logically and to understand it's the society around you. It is not you. You know, you are the one trying to be sane here. You're stuck in a mental institution. Understand it. and keep your sanity. Let's wrap up on that note and get into the Christian specific segment this week. Again, I'm kind of actually making an attempt to not run over time. I fail week in and week out miserably at it, but I do make the attempt. I do make the attempt. It's not like, you know, it's not like Sven really expects me to manage it, because he's just come to understand. I just can't hardly do it, but I do make the attempt. I do try. So you know what to do. If you want to, if you don't want to stick around for the Christian specific segment, well, you're welcome if you want to. If you don't, most people do. I can say I get a kick because people say, well, I don't believe in any of the Christian stuff, but I enjoy the Christian specific segment. Anyway, you're welcome. If not, hey, glad you joined us. Let's go down here, fill those pews, check your cup of coffee. Might need a reheat. I think I'm going to. And let's get into this week's sermon, as it were, here at the Parish of the Patriots. That's why we're here. You know, you go show up at the church early and everybody stands around outside and visits about topics of the day. But then at some point in time, the preacher comes out and he's like, time to get in here, fill them pews. Well, that's what I'm doing. Get in here. Yeah, let's get in. This is why we show up here week in and week out. So get on in here. And I thought this week we would discuss about, you know, I'm not really necessarily going to sit here and read verses out of the Bible to you this week. I thought we would discuss about this notion that, you know, we would say, Christian people, we will tend to say things like, you know, it's in God's hand. God's got this, you know, and we talk about as Christian believers, the victory is our, we've already won this. And I thought we'd kind of get into that a little bit and talk about, you know, what that really means, because it doesn't look like it. It looks like we're kind of deceiving ourselves. You know, we kind of, we look around here in clown society and it looks like, well, we keep saying we've got this and victory is ours through Christ, but it looks like Team Devil's doing pretty good, don't it? I mean, it's kind of discouraging. So I thought we would get into, you know, what that means really in reality, what that means for us and for those around us, for society as a whole, the world as a whole. So hopefully you're settled in. I did. I paused recording, went and got a cup of coffee. You're always free to do that. I always say one of the things I think is so neat about this format, these podcasts, is, you know, the ability. You can get up at any time, pause, go do what you need to do, and you don't miss a thing. I think that's so cool compared to like old traditional radio. I think it's a neat thing. So as Christian believers, you know, we always talk about, you know, victory is ours, victory in Jesus. We got victory, and victory is ours. You know, God has this. It's in God's hands. And when we look around and we live as Christian believers in a satanic, and this is a satanic society, I mean, you need to understand that. People talk about, they read the book of Revelation and they want to understand it and they want to apply it to the world around us. And there's some interesting things in there that I think can very much be applied to the world around us. It's hard to understand, but people want to, like, you know, they're looking for that everybody running around falling on their faces worshiping the beast, and it's not looking like that. You got everybody running around worshiping the lie right now around us, but everybody's looking for that. But you have to understand, this is a satanic, you don't have to wait for like some kind of one world realm, and we may actually get that, but one world devil worship thing, because we're pretty much, you are in absolutely in a satanic society, because as we cover week in, week out right here, everything is based on lies. And Jesus said the devil is the father of lies. When he speaks lies, he speaks his own language. There's no truth in him. That is what you expect from him. And I think it's funny, because it wasn't really like when Jesus said that, he wasn't really being malicious about it. You know, he wasn't like ranting and raving. He was just saying that's how he is. That's what he does. That's what the devil does. We live in a satanic society. Everything is built on lies. We are fed lies in, out, day in, day out, day in, and told to embrace them. So it gets really hard to understand how we can have this, how you're supposed to somehow have this positive outlook that in the end we win. You know, well, of course, the first part of that is understanding that Jesus can end this experiment. The Lord can end this experiment at any time he so chooses. And it is a very, again, our historical perspectives tend to be our own lifetimes. But really, this whole thing really is very short when you think about it. I mean, generations after generations after generations come. And is it a long time ago? Well, if you just think of things in the context of your lifetime, yeah, it was a long time ago. But in reality, it's not. And for the Lord, it's nothing. Because again, the Lord's realm, the kingdom of heaven, is the eternal realm where time does not exist. We're stuck in this experiment, as it were. I think of it as an experiment, is where God created this little capsule, this linear time for us to go through and learn and grow. Victory is ours because the Lord can end this at any time. Now, of course, the modern church and the MCC, and so many modern Christians, they will sit here and adopt this attitude that means they sit around and just waiting on the Lord to take care of everything. See, the whole point of this thing we're in, this time essence that we're stuck in right now, is to see what we do. It's not so God can see what we can do, so we can see what we do. We can learn. It's all about making sure. See, the thing about the devil is it's always, it's important to read all of these things in your Bible because you learn the patterns. And if you understand the pattern, and I talk about this when, whether you're talking about the pattern of, I go on and on about the checklist. I talked about that last week. You go through the Old Testament, what brings about God's judgment? There's the checklist. You learn the patterns, and the patterns apply now the same as they ever have. The thing in this linear world, this linear time world that we live in, which is very small because we're actually just surrounded, as it were, by the eternal, where time does not exist, which is God's realm. It sounds so metaphysical. But anyway, we did a whole show on that some time back. But we're not going to get bogged down. I'm not going to let myself get bogged down in repeating that again. But you understand the patterns. Okay. So the thing is with the devil is, and one of the things I always hate, that old saying, the devil made me do it, because the devil don't make you do shit. Everything, the way this entire system's set up, and yes, the Satan is factored into the system. When you say Satan has dominion in this world, we know this. This is proven in the Bible. It was proven in the world you look around. Satan has dominion here. But you see, we tend to think of that as like a wrench thrown into the work. Like God had this plan for the world, but then Satan come along and screwed the whole plan up. But wouldn't that be to insinuate that God's plan was imperfect? That like Satan did something God wasn't expecting? You have to understand that even Satan's dominion in this world fit into the larger scheme of things. Because if it didn't, does God have the ability to end this now or not? Because we're telling you, read the prophecies, we're told that at some point in time, Jesus returns and it's over. It isn't going to be. He warned, it isn't going to be, oh, I hear he's in the desert. Oh, I hear he's in this country. Let's go over here. No, he said, when I come back, that's the end of the experiment. That's the final thing. That's when, okay, it's done. Let's see where everybody's at. It's time to tally up the scores, as it were. So understanding this, that God has the ability to end this whole thing anytime he wants. If Satan had come along and screwed God's plan up, God had this perfect plan for the world, and Satan came along and screwed it up beyond repair, Jesus has got to come back and fix it. No, Jesus will come back and end the experiment. At some point, everything in this linear time has to come to an end, and he will wrap this up, perhaps to repeat it again. I don't know. But the point is, if Satan had simply wrecked God's plan, then God would just scrap it and say, okay, because is he not sovereign? Is he not able to do that? Well, of course he is, because if he can do it someday, he could do it today. Again, remember, God doesn't exist in time, so it's not like he has to wait. He has to wait until he's ready to take on Satan. If Satan had come along and just simply wrecked God's plan, then God could stop the experiment and say, okay, fine, you wrecked my plan, let's start the plan over again. He could do that. If he's got the power to throw Satan finally into hell and lock him up for good at some point, he's got the power to do it now. Nothing's going to change. God doesn't change. So the fact that Satan has dominion in this world means that God has actually factored that in. In fact, I think Satan plays a key role in this whole experiment. Even now, Satan himself probably doesn't get that necessarily. He's too busy raging against God and what God has created. Satan is a destroyer. That's what he exists to do. He destroys. God creates. So we know we live in a satanic society. But you see, again, when you go back and look at all the interactions with the devil, it's choices, from you go to Genesis to the Garden of Eden. The snake didn't wrap his tail around Eve's neck and slam her to the ground and shove the forbidden fruit, as it's illustrated, down her throat. He just gave her the choice. Now, granted, he sold it to her. But he didn't force her. He didn't shove it down her mouth and make her take it against her will. She made that choice. And likewise, Adam also made that choice. It's very important to understand. People get hung up on dumbass shit. Well, was it an apple they were eating? What kind of fruit? You don't. It's an illustration. It's a very important point right there at the beginning. You open up the very first damn book. I shouldn't say it that way. I get on a roll. You open up the very first book in the Bible and you have such an important illustration to understand the life around you. And people miss it because they want to argue, what kind of fruit was it? It's an illustration. What you're supposed to understand is that Adam and Eve, they had the choice. And all through the Bible, you see that they have the choice. People ultimately have the choice. No, I'm not saying everything that happens to you is a result of your choice. Sometimes outside forces do crap to you. Yes. But how you deal with them, once again, is your choice. The devil don't make you do nothing. Never get into that mindset, well, Satan's just forcing me. No, Satan tempts you. Satan can sit there and talk and whisper in your ear and try to sell you that it's going to be okay. You can go ahead and you can, but the choice is yours. It's in the very first book of the Bible. It's such an important illustration. It's lost on so many people. It's the way Satan operates time and time again. You look at, we covered just what? Last week or the week before, the temptation of Jesus. You know, what did Satan do? He came and said, look, if you do this, I'll do this. Or, hey, why don't you? But it was always a choice. Jesus had to ultimately make the choice. You ultimately have to make the choice. That's the way this works. You want to know why our societies are in a mess? Oh, they're satanic. Yes, absolutely. We live in a satanic society. Everything is built on lies. Everything is built. Everything is corruption. Everything is being destroyed around us. And guess what? The devil just sold everybody on it. Generation after generation here has been sold on it. Satan didn't come in here and screw all of this up. Man did that. The people did that. The people abandoned God. The people said, we don't need God. In fact, we've got science and we have new gods that are a lot better than your old God. We can do it all. Look at the pride and arrogance around you. And it seems more and more absurd now as we look at clown society and they're running around talking about America's the greatest country on the face of the earth they ever have been. And it's like, we've got child trannies. We've got nonstop porn. What? How is this the greatest society ever? It looks absurd looking at the arrogance of the West now. But if you go back a generation or two, you know, it looked pretty good. And people got this haughty, arrogant attitude. Who needs God? We put a man on the moon. Snicker, snicker. We put a man on the moon. We can do anything. We have a new God, science. We're going to fly spaceships through the universe and we'll have to invent warp drives because it's so vast. The universe is tiny. The universe is absolutely tiny compared to the realm of the eternal. The result of your society today, the devil didn't make you do shit. The devil didn't make your ancestors do it. They all had a choice. You look back on historical figures, and you think, man, if they hadn't done that, if the guy that was president of America back then hadn't chose to do that. Well, the devil didn't make him do it. He had the choice and he made that choice. Crooked politics, corrupt people. That's the system that we have. The corrupt people can choose to burn the entire future of the nation down in exchange for a life of wealth and luxury for them. Of course, them people are dead now. Because this thing ends for each of us at death. We cross over from the temporal realm to the eternal realm. Those people are long gone, but they enjoyed their little flash-in-the-pan life of luxury. All they had to do was sell out the future. All they had to do was make the choice. You live in a satanic society. Guess what? Satan didn't build it. Man built that. This society you live in is built on the cumulative choices of the people now and the ancestors who came before. That's why you can't use, really not fair to use terms like we did this. Well, that's not exactly true. I didn't choose what happened in 1952 or whatever year you want to pick. I didn't have a part of choosing to set up the Federal Reserve or any other bogus decision that you can look at that's been made. But the society around us continues to be what it is because of everybody that's making choices today. Now, of course, contrary to what they sell us under this democracy system, the people themselves have very little choice as to what the government does. They tell us this is government by the people. We know that's a lie. Under a monarchy, the people have more say-so in how their country's run than under this lie system. But the corruption of the society as a whole is the choices of the people. If they tried to sell the people on whatever lunatic idea they're pushing at the time, there's so many, it's hard to say. Let's look at the doom flu narrative, which is obviously observably a hoax. If everybody just simply refused to go along with it, if every store said, no, we're not closing, no, we're not doing 50%, no, we're going to ignore you because that's retarded. If the people themselves refused, every single person in the country chose to not wear a mask and just ignore that nonsense, then things would look quite a bit different, wouldn't they? Now, you might be sitting here and say, well, what can I do? I'm not doing any of those things. I'm choosing not to. And see, that is the whole point. And this is why victory is ultimately yours, because it is about, and this is so hard to illustrate without sounding like the world revolves around you as a person, which is kind of gets bogged down. That mindset bogs down what the MCC preaches, this narcissistic. Well, I shouldn't really say narcissist. That's not true. That's not the correct term, rather. It's more of this like small self-centered view of the world, which so many people have, that the world revolves around them. You look at all these wannabe celebrities on social media. She's an Instagram star. Yeah, and these people all have this common trait that they think that the world revolves around them personally. They think God revolves around them personally. Like God exists. Simply God is like a planet orbiting, and they are the sun. They are the center of God's universe, and God does everything. And just it's just about them. It's not what I'm saying, but I am saying victory is yours personally because it is about what decisions you choose to make. No, you don't have any ability to make other people's decisions for them, because then people wouldn't have the free will to make those decisions, which is the whole point of this experiment. For lack of a better term, I keep using the term experiment, this exercise of this temporal realm that God has put us in to go through. You can't make those decisions for other people. If that was allowed, then God could just make the decisions for you, but then the whole thing would be stupid because we would just be mindless robots going around doing what God tells us to do. That's not the point. But victory is yours because you do. You personally are empowered. You have the choice how you're going to live. You have the choice of what you're going to do every day. And don't get bogged down by your past choices. And this is the victory in Christ, because you are free of those. I don't care if you chose to stick the damn needle in your arm yesterday. Today, guess what? You got the choice. And Satan will lie to you. He'll tell you, well, there's no point. You stuck the needle in your arm yesterday. What's the point of resisting today? You've already sullied yourself. Get away from you, Satan. Get away from me, Satan. That's a lie. That is a lie. Because of victory in Jesus, because you have the choice today. Satan will tell you your past choices have bound you to what you choose today. That is a lie. He's selling you, he's trying to sell you a lie, because the choice is still yours. If you choose to listen to his line of shit and stick the needle in your arm today because you did it yesterday, so what the hell, I'm doomed anyway, it's still your choice. You can't sit there later and tell God, well, devil stuck the arm. The devil's not going to grab the damn needle and shove it in your arm. That's your choice. Now, the devil will try to convince you that you stuck the needle in your arm yesterday. You stuck the needle in your arm last week. The longest you've ever been able to go without using drugs is 6 months. And now look where you're at. You did it again. There's no point. There's no point. You're always going to fail. You're just going to keep doing it. So, yeah, what's the difference? And it feels good, right? Nobody sticks drugs in their arm because it feels bad. By the way, you know, if you don't do drugs, you look at people that, you know, they're all strung out, look like shit. You know, needle marks all over their arms. And you're like, why would anybody do that? It's so destructive. What a horrible, horrible thing. But it feels good when they do it. I mean, that's why they do it. They get something out of it. They're not doing it because, man, if they stuck the needle in the arm and the whole body was racked in pain and they threw up and that was the whole experience, they wouldn't do that. Nobody would do that. It feels good when they do it. And that's the selling point. Satan, sit there and say, stick it. You know what feels good. You know you want to. Even though you're trying to fight it, why are you fighting it? You did it yesterday anyway. The longest you've ever gone without using 6 months, what's the point? You're going to fail again. He's trying to make you choice. You see, he's selling you. He's constantly selling you because if he could force you to do it, he wouldn't have to convince you, right? Right? The choice is yours. Don't get bogged. That's why you have victory in Jesus, because Jesus says what you did yesterday don't count. If you have faith in Christ and you are continually striving towards him, Jesus says the choice you made yesterday is dead and gone. That is, and it is, a temporal realm flows one way. This is a one way, like on a conveyor belt. This thing goes one direction. What happened yesterday is dead and gone. The choice is fresh. His choice is yours today. Don't let Satan tell you that somehow the choice you make today has to be based on the fact that you're corrupted somehow because of the choice you made yesterday. That's gone. That's never coming back. The choice you make today is your own to make. And that's why you have victory in Jesus. Because Jesus says that don't matter. The choice is yours to make. Now, Jesus, likewise, isn't going to come in and do it for you. Jesus isn't going to step in. God isn't going to sit there and control you and make the decision for you. It's your choice to make. You can seek his counsel and you can seek his strength and his encouragement. Pray, God, help me through that. I'm trying to make this right decision. And you're making this effort and seek to draw from his strength and everything else you can do. But the choice ultimately is still yours. You have control. Because we spend a lot of time on these shows, looking at society as a whole and things such as this, but you always have to come back to, what do you have control over? You don't have control over other people. There's one thing you were given sovereignty over in this short life you have, and that is yourself. God has granted you sovereignty over yourself in the sense that you have the ultimate choice. You make the choices in your life. Satan doesn't have sovereignty over you as an individual person. God has granted you that sovereignty. It's kind of like the old Magna Carta, where like even a peasant's house was considered his castle and it had to be respected as such. It's like that. That's what God has granted you. It's like a God man Magna Carta. You have sovereignty. You are sovereign over your own life while it exists in this realm. That's what God has given you. That is a gift God has given you. It's a gift and it is a burden. Every king has a burden. Every peasant that lived in a house, yeah, it was his castle, but that meant he was responsible. If his house was a mess and falling down and a wreck, it wasn't the king's fault. That's your castle, peasant. Likewise, you have sovereignty over your life, so the condition of your life is your ultimate responsibility. God has granted you that, and he has burdened you with that. But you have that sovereignty. People get so frustrated and they go off the deep end because they look around at insane world and they realize it's insane. We want to fix it, but we don't have control over other people, do we? And that drives you to madness. That drives people to just going off the deep end. We're seeing people go crazier and crazier as they're being isolated in the name of these lockdowns, as people are witnessing societal decay, and for the non-believers, they got nothing to work with here. Being a non-believer and looking at the destruction of the world around them and thinking this is it, that what a doom and gloom way to look at it. The thing is, you have the ability to control yourself. That's what you have sovereignty. You don't got sovereignty over your neighbor. I don't have sovereignty over a single one of you. Listen, I tell people, look, people will disagree with something I say on the show. Look, I believe in this. I'm going to do this. And I always tell them, you do you, fam. Bruh, do you. I got no power over what a single one of you do. I do not have sovereignty over a single member of the congregation. Sovereignty over myself. And sometimes I've made a mess of it. Sometimes I feel pretty good about it. But I have sovereignty over myself in that I'm the one who has to make decisions for me. And you have to be the one that makes the decision for you. I don't make your decisions for you. You know, people ask you your opinion because they're trying to come to a decision. But understand, when you ask somebody for their opinion, they can't make the choice for you. That drives me crazy. Doesn't it drive you crazy? Like when you have a friend and they'll come up to you and be like, man, I got this problem. You're like, oh, really? And you're assuming like yeah, oh, okay, they're going to tell you their problems, and they just kind of want your advice, and they tell you a problem, and you're like, well, I don't know. I mean, you know, you could do this, that. You kind of lay their choices out for them. And like the longer it drags on, you realize that they're like trying to push the decision off on you. They don't want to be sovereign over their own lives. They want you to be their king. They want you in this instant because they don't want to bear the responsibility. You see, if they usually know what they need to do, but they're afraid. And they're trying to set you up in the position of you. They shove the responsibility. They shove the sovereignty off on you. And that way, if they make that decision and it goes to crap, they come back and blame you, right? Like, you did it. And you're like, what are you talking about? You were just asking me, and I told you my opinion. You were the one that chose to do that. Oh, no, no, no. You're the one that talked me into it. I would have never done it if you hadn't said that. Drives me crazy. Everybody is sovereign over their own life. As we wrap up, because I'm looking at the clock here, and lo and behold, imagine that, we ran over. Not as over as we generally have been running, though, so it is, we're seeing some improvement. It's trending in the right direction. But as we wrap up, you know, understand these things, you know, and understand, that's why we do, you know, like we do this show. I mean, we try to understand, help all of you, our audience here. I hope that you can make better decisions and understand that you are not powerless, but you do have limited power. You have sovereignty over yourself. So, but you're not powerless, because people get feeling like they're powerless, and that's where people get sucked into despair and such, because you feel like you're powerless. No, you have power. You have power. You have power over yourself, but that's the only power you're given. Now, sometimes you get a limited amount of power depending on your position and status in society, but generally speaking, you have every man, the absolute power every man is given is over himself and the decisions he chooses to make. That is God-given. So don't think that you're absolutely powerless, because you do have a certain amount of power, and ultimately, it is in God's hands. You just have to carry out your role. Now, as we wrap up, I was talking about people that, you know, will ask you for advice, you know, and you know, they ultimately try to like shove the decision off on you, so if it goes south, they can blame you. And sadly, likewise, too many Christians, too much of the MCC attempts to, likewise, they try to shove that ultimate responsibility off on God himself, off on Jesus himself. They try to make the decision the Lord's. You know, I mean, you can seek God's counsel. You can seek, and you should. You should seek God's counsel and prayer, and perhaps he will give you a direction. He will show you the direction you should go. He'll grant you some clarity so that you, but understand, you can't shove that decision, just like you can't shove it off on your friend that you seek counsel from. You can't shove the decision off on God either. So this is the whole point of this exercise that we're going through. And at some point, the exercise ends for everybody. You know? And once this little short life ends for you, what happens afterwards is irrelevant for you, because you enter into the eternal realm where time doesn't exist. So this is coming to an end. And the older you get, you know, the sooner it is, the sooner that time is coming. We got to wrap up on that note. And hopefully you got something. I have to say, hopefully you got something out of it. I put a lot of effort into it. Hopefully you got something out of it. I think it's a new way to look at things, or at least grant you some clarity there. That's always our goal here. Thank you once again to those of you who do financially support the show. It means more to me than I can convey. I really do. I mean, every little bit helps, believe me. It helps financially, and it helps. It's just a morale boost for me. I really do appreciate it, and it's always good to hear from you. Wrapping up on that note, don't forget, I'm on Fridays on the Daily Nationalist with Sven Longchange. We always have interesting short discussions. It's always a nice break to have an interaction with somebody else. Hopefully in the near future, we can get together for another Radio Albion Roundtable with Sven and Dr. Johnson. I really enjoy doing those, so I'll try to let you know. Clue you in whenever we do one of those. But you know, we'll be back here next Tuesday. Hope to see you here for the Parish of the Patriots.